Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it's my pleasure to welcome to the Solaria Report for the quarterly equity overview my partner Chuck Gibson. We're partners at Sea Lane Advisory, and he is also the managing member and head of Financial Perspectives in Pleasanton, California, in the San Francisco Bay Area. Today, we have two topics to talk about. The first is to check in and see what's happened in the market, in the equity markets over the last quarter, get a perspective. There's a lot in the news on the equity markets in the U.S. stock market, and we want to make sure we sit back and look at things as Chuck likes to do, with statistics in mind. And then for the second part, we're going to talk about how you identify the bottom in a market, and that's because obviously we like to buy low, not high. And so two parts today. Chuck, welcome to the Solaria Report.
Thanks, Catherine. It's great to be on again. Appreciate it.
Okay, so round us up. Give us a roundup on how the markets did in the second quarter.
Okay, so the first part, as you said, we're going to talk about the markets, and the second one we'll go into, as you call them, bottoms and opportunities. So on the first part, let's take a look and start off with the hopefully familiar chart number one, and this is a look at how the indexes did across both for the final month of the quarter, June, the quarter to date, year to date. And you can see the interesting thing was that everything on this chart was made money for the second quarter.
Right.
And we had the S&P was up 4.7%. We had the EAFE, Europe and Australia, Asia was up almost 2%. The emerging markets were up strongly. They were up greater than any of those at 5.4%. Bonds were up, and gold and silver continued.
Right, and gold had a good first half.
It did. And you know, hopefully, I'm knocking on wood, that, you know, that will continue.
Right.
All right, let's move on to chart number two then. So this is a chart of the United States sectors, and you know, there's one big line here, one big bar, and that is the energy sector. Everything else was kind of middling, other than utilities. But energy dominated the sector. I mean, dominated the performance during Q2.
It's interesting because we keep saying this every time you show a sector chart, and that is how remarkable it is that you have a few sectors doing really well and the rest of the sectors flat or not doing well. So it's not an even market at all.
No, and you know, you and I have pondered this for so long. Say, wouldn't it be great if there was a way we could just figure out ahead of time just to be invested in energy, you know, for this last quarter? Because they rotate. They rotate on average from 1 month to 3 months and they stay strong. But you know, it's fleeting. So, unfortunately, as much as we like to do that, haven't quite figured out the secret decoder ring on that one. All right, let's move on to chart number three.
Okay.
This is a look at the world markets across virtually every index that's available in the world markets. And like the United States and Europe, Asia, most countries were up for the quarter. There were a few exceptions. But the big winners were India, Egypt, and Pakistan, and the Philippines. And Venezuela was the big loser. Now, that hasn't changed much.
Well, they were the big winner last year, so it was just, a small part. It was a small part of what they were up last year. But, it does sort of look like a balloon expanding.
It does.
And it does.
Is there a reason for that? Is that because of, you know, is everything wonderful with equities, or is it for some other reason because of, for example, expansion of monetary policy that's driving
right.
money there.
Right. Well, we know one of the big financial stories of the last, you know, certainly of this year was the Fed taper. And the Fed tapers, it's still continuing to buy an extraordinary amount. So monetary policy in the developed world continues to be pretty loose, and, you know, including Europe and Japan.
Yeah, I was just going to mention Japan, because Japan has been, you know, it actually had a little bit of an upside on the second quarter, but it's still down for the year.
Right.
In spite of all of that monetary expansion.
Right.
Okay. that's good for that one. Let's move on to chart number four. I think I introduced this last quarter, and I call this my follow the money chart. And what this does is this shows money flows in the first sector or the first section by region.
Now, this is just ETFs, so it's not the full market. It's just
correct.
ETFs, but I think ETFs are a good sort of indicator for the broader market.
Well, they are. The other thing is that I don't know the exact number, but ETFs contain more money than do mutual funds. So if you're going to pick one as a proxy for the markets, then ETFs are your best.
Right.
So clearly the regions were dominated by North America and the developed markets. Everything else was small in comparison, but interesting how the emerging markets continue. Although they ramped down slightly from start to finish, they're still gaining some traction in positive money flow because the prior years they were negative.
Right, and they're still relatively tiny compared to the developed markets. So if you just look at the nominal dollars, developed continues to be the sort of the 800-pound gorilla.
Yeah, but you know the other thing is, as you said, because they're so small, all it takes is a little bit of money flow to get them to bump up in price pretty good.
Right, right.
Okay, let's go down to the next little section in this chart, and it's looking at sector within the United States, and we can see that money flowed directly into energy, and lo and behold, that's exactly what we saw reflected in the big winner for the quarter was energy, and of course, that's where we saw the most money flow into.
Right.
So that's why, you know, I call this the follow the money chart, because as long as money's flowing in there, you'd expect prices to go higher.
Right.
And finally, let's take a look at the final little section on here, which is the commodities. And the big winner there was precious metals.
Right. And with gold doing a little bit better than silver.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. All righty. Let's move on to the next chart, number five. That's my institutional index. And I think I introduced this last quarter.
So yeah, we looked at it last quarter.
Just want to remind everybody what it is. It's a cap-weighted index of 75 of the most widely held equity investments among institutional equity portfolios. And really what it's there for is trying to reflect the performance of core stock holdings of the institutions.
Right.
And the reason why that's important is because, well, the institutions control 80% or thereabouts of the money, and knowing what they do gives us an insight as to what might happen. So, you know, if you look here, I think last quarter when I brought the attention, we were in what I considered a consolidation zone. I've highlighted that in that kind of pinkish area.
Uh-huh.
We were chopping around, and lo and behold, right in the end of March, it broke out. And ever since then, it's just been marching higher.
And there's no doubt about it that this is, you know, there's a big question mark. I was teasing you today because we had Greenspan announce that, you know, the market was going to consolidate.
Yes.
Thank you, Alan.
Yeah.
But that's because the seasonal patterns are usually, you know, we keep talking in the Salieri report about sell in May and go away, but the seasonal patterns would typically call for a correction at this time. And we know that, you know, summer in the second term and in the midterm election period is statistically,
yep,
you know, from historical patterns, is a weak time, and yet we see very little weakness.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, I'm going to repeat myself a number of times because, you know, it took me a long time to figure this out. And, you know, there's a lot of people that like to call tops.
Right.
And what I don't want to do is, you know, be a top picker, because that's not what I'm saying. But, you know, tops, as long as the market is printing higher highs and higher lows, and that's exactly what you see, you know, a top isn't in.
Right, right. So you know, the market's behavior says, you know, stocks are the place to be,
yep,
particularly U.S. stocks. And yet I think it makes a lot of people nervous because the sort of the seasonal patterns say, you know, this shouldn't be a good month, but that's not what's happening. So I think, you know, because we did a great Salieri report where you described the returns to the long-term investor if they buy high. So there's a real concern about getting, you know, about buying high. And yet, if you look at the institutional chart, what it says is, you know, the market's going higher.
Yep. Well, the other thing I wanted to point out here, and I'm kind of going to go off on a tangent, but because this chart helps me explain what it is that I want to reemphasize, because, you know, I think it's really, really, really important. I can't emphasize it more because, you know, it took me about a year. I kept hearing this, and it really didn't register with me. So I'm going to continue to repeat myself. Hopefully, you know, your listeners will pick it up sooner than I do. But markets do two things, only two things. They either consolidate, that means they go sideways, or they trend.
Right.
And trending could be up or down.
Right.
And so what you do, you know, when they're in a trend, you want to invest in them because the trend is your friend. Invested when you see a trend. The times you should be concerned is when you start to see consolidation, because what that means is one of two things. It means one thing. It means that there is an equilibrium between buyers and sellers. But what that means is that at some point in time, that equilibrium is going to break.
Right.
And once it breaks, you want to be on the side of the break.
Right.
If it breaks down and you're in stocks, that's telling you you might want to consider lightening your load.
Right.
If it breaks up, you know, that's further confirmation. You need to, if you weren't invested, now is a good time.
Right. So to me, what the institutional market says is the trend is up.
Absolutely. And don't fight it, because you're going to get a signal. It may be a little bit later than you like, but you're going to get a signal that the trend has ended.
Right.
All right. Well, I think the next chart is one other reason why we, including myself, tend to be a little bit cautious. And this is valuations.
Right.
So we don't like to buy at tops, and we don't know where the top is, but because we can't put a point or a measure on what a top is, what we can do is we have a reference point, which is valuations.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we're at 84%. We're at 84%. And what that means is that we're roughly at two standard deviations away from the mean.
Right, and you're talking about mean of the price earnings ratio.
Correct. So yeah, thank you.
So let me jump back for the people who are not investors traditionally. So if a company has a dollar of earnings and it trades at $10, its stock trades at $10 per, so its earnings are $1 per share and its stock is valued at $10 a share, its PE is 10 times earnings. Okay.
Correct.
And so the question is how much. When you look at the average PEs in a market, you're saying here's how much the market values a dollar of earnings. And we are relatively very high right now. And the, you know, the old saying is everything always reverts to the mean. So the higher you go relative to the mean, you're always wondering, oh no, how do I get out before it starts to revert?
Well, I gotta give you a compliment. You always explain that so well, and because you did it last quarter, you stepped in and interjected for me to help explain it, and I thank you for that. That's perfect. I couldn't have said it any better.
Well, I always laugh at this point because, you know, I'm the great believer that you know, there are scenarios where it can what's called crash up, so it could go much higher. And I just kept laughing because I was reading a book that we both love this weekend, and it kept quoting Keynes, who said, you know, the market can remain irrational much longer than you can remain solvent.
Exactly. I love that saying. And, you know, there's a good example right there. Look at the year 2000 on this chart. You know, right now we're at 84% above the mean, but that one was 162% above the mean.
Right.
It doesn't mean that, you know, this is the end, because last quarter, I don't know if you remember, last quarter this was at 79.
Right.
And so it's bumped up 5 percentage points, and we're now at 84. But why fight it? If the market, for whatever reason, and I don't know why, but if the market is going to go up and it wants to continue to go up, why should we, you know, try and fight it?
Right. We just need to understand that traditionally it does revert to the mean. And if we're above the mean, we need to keep that in mind and be cognizant.
Yep. Yeah. No, and that's good. I'm glad you said that. I'm going to talk a little bit about that at my last chart.
Okay.
So if we go to the next one, which is chart number 7. So, you know, I find sentiment really, really exciting and interesting because it's something that is conceptually very hard to grasp, but it really has an impact on the market. And so what I wanted to do is each time that I come onto the Solaria report, I want to make sure that I include some sort of sentiment indicator or valuation here. And so and the reason why is because when it becomes to extreme levels, that's when you as an investor should look for opportunities. Because when everybody's on one side of the boat, you want to be on the other side. Because here's the example. If everybody hates something and they don't want to own it and they've sold it because they think, I've just given up, I want to take my money and go somewhere else, there's nobody left to sell. It can't go any lower. It doesn't mean it's going to go up. It just means that the chances of you losing money are really low. And at some point in time, somebody, as long as it's a good investment, somebody's right, going to find it of value, and it's going to start to pick up in price. So what you are is you're bottom picking.
Right.
And this is why sentiment is so important. So what this is a chart of Merrill Lynch puts together a fund manager survey where they poll a whole bunch of fund managers, asking them how they have their investors' money positioned into what places as compared to history. And so what you really want to focus on is the stuff at the extremes, because the stuff in the middle, that's just not that big a deal. But the stuff at the extremes, there, it's important. So if you were a contrarian and you want to go against the crowd because that's the right place to be, mm-hmm, is that you'd want to have exposure to commodities, bonds, and the emerging markets.
Right.
And why you really want to consider reducing your exposure to real estate, banks, and the developed markets.
Right.
Now, the one thing this doesn't tell you about at all is timing on all this. So this could stay this way for quite a while, but eventually, like you said, things revert back to the mean, and you're going to see those things swing to the other side.
The one difference between this and the surveys I've seen is, and I go back to the Citibank survey about, I think it was at the beginning of the year, where their family offices showed 39% in cash, so much bigger cash positions than this is showing. And that's what I still see, but obviously my sample is much smaller.
Yeah, I don't know that survey. That was, this one is only for fund managers. I don't know if
right,
that was for fund managers also, or did that include?
No, that was family offices.
Oh, okay.
That was family offices.
Okay. So that's it for sentiment. And one of the things that was on the sentiment chart was talking about the emerging markets, or excuse me, commodities. And so let's look at chart number 8, which is the commodity chart.
Which is a very broad, CRB is a very broad basket of commodities.
Yep, 19, yeah. I think it's 19 separate commodities that includes foods, oils, natural gas, all different types of commodities. So it is a basket. And I think it was last quarter I presented that we had a breakout of this long-term downtrend line that's been bugging us for 3 years, and we knew at some point in time it would create an opportunity, and it presented itself. And what you see here, as I'm going to point out, is that you had the breakout, and then what happened? It marched very nicely higher, and then right now what is it doing? It's consolidating.
Right.
So as an investor, you have to look at that and say, consolidation, raise a flag. Is this going to break up or is it going to break down? Because at some point in time, it's going to break out of consolidation, and we want to make sure we're on the right side of it. So as long as it's trending, you just sit back and enjoy the gains. When it's consolidating, you have to raise a flag and look closely and watch it.
Right. And then it breaks out, and then it fakes out.
Well, I didn't want to go there.
Okay.
That's true. All right, let's go to the next chart, which is the emerging markets, because that was another area where the sentiment indicator was telling you probably want to be overexposed at this point in time.
Right, but it has to be related to commodities.
I was just going to say it has to. It is exactly related to commodities. And what you normally see is the emerging market chart look very, very similar to the commodity chart. And while this one isn't quite as steep a downtrend like the commodities was in, it too had a downtrend for the last 3 years. And it had a breakout. And I pointed that out, that first breakout.
Right.
I mentioned last quarter and said I was a little wary because I just thought it was a short term, and I'd be a lot more interested if it broke that bigger, longer term, solid blue trend line, which it did finally in the second quarter.
All right. Well, one of the challenges is the seasonal challenge, which is if we do get a seasonal correction, then you would expect everything to correct.
Yep.
You know, the air go out to the balloon. So I think if we are in a breakout, the question is, when do you buy? Because you know if you get a correction, it's going to drop some more, or it's likely.
Yeah, right. And also, you talk about the fake out, and I wasn't going to go down there, but, but you know, those that already own commodities, if you start to fall, are you saying, uh-oh,
right.
So is it time to get out of the way because this is actually a reversal of direction and I need to get out of the way, or is it just, you know, a larger consolidation?
Right.
The other thing I did want to point out is that, again, remember, we both, you know, when I mentioned the fact that commodities look very, very similar because of to the emerging markets, notice what's happening, though. We have a divergence. We have the emerging markets are marching higher because it's higher highs and higher lows, but yet I won't, you know, they can go back and look at the commodity chart. What we had was higher highs, higher lows, and then now it's sideways.
Right.
And normally they move in lockstep. And so something is wrong. One of these two is wrong. And I don't know which one it is. Either commodities are the right way and the emerging markets are going to start to correct, or we're going to see the commodity chart start to pick up in gear and take off and follow the emerging markets. But it is of interest, and I think it's something worth following.
Right.
Closely.
And we know over time that we would expect that the consumer portion of their economies grow larger, and so commodities end up being a smaller part necessarily, yep. But that's going to take a long time. It didn't just happen over the last 3 months.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And, again, it goes back to all the timing and there's just no way to know. You just have to have some patience. All right, let's move on to chart number 10. And since we're on the discussion of commodities and, you know, normally when commodities in the emerging markets are rising, that's normally a good indication that there is inflation.
Right.
And so, you know, as soon as I saw the commodity chart and as soon as I put the emerging market chart together, I said, I gotta tie this all together with looking at inflation. So I pulled this table from Stockman, who, you know, I trust with the data. I don't know where.
Right. This is one of my favorite charts. This is a great chart because every time the Fed says food prices aren't up, you know, I say clearly they don't shop for themselves. You know, they have no clue.
Well, the one thing I did want to point out, you know, they can see the chart and what's on there and see some of the mind-blowing increases that we've seen since the year 2000. But I think the most important one, or it makes me laugh, is that if go down to the third row from the bottom, the second row from the bottom, which indicates the government reported consumer price index, and it shows that over that period, it has risen 39%, and then look at what reality is, which
right.
is all the things on top of it.
Right. It's one of the great market divergences of our lifetime.
Exactly. You know, don't pay any attention to the guy behind the mirror.
Well, what I've seen, go back to sentiment for a second, is coming out of 2008 and 2009, everybody was worried about safety. But as the inflation is squeezing more and more, there's been a real concern, where can I get yield? And that's, you know, I would really encourage everybody to go back and listen to this report we did with Chuck on why dividends matter. Because I think that's one of the dynamics we're seeing is a real need for yield, not just in the bond market, in the stock market as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It has a funny way of pushing things around, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It really does.
Okay, my final chart for part one, you know, what I did was put together a ratio chart of the S&P to the 30-year Treasury bond, and that's in the top pane there, the bigger pane. And below that is the S&P 500. And all I wanted to do was illustrate one thing, and this goes back to, you know, I can't tell you how many people are picking tops and how many people are afraid that we're, you know, the market's going to crash from here. Well, it's possible. Anything is possible. But if you look at the past two peaks, and this is what I go from, you look at the past two peaks, look at this ratio, and at that peak, it was not at the peak of the stock market. What
right.
I'm saying is that the peak of the stock-to-bond ratio started to fall before prices of stocks actually started to fall.
Right.
So what this says to me, again, if history is of any consequence and we get some repetition in the pattern, even if this is the top in this ratio, stocks haven't topped out yet.
Right. Right. This chart is very interesting to me for several reasons. One is, you know, what it clearly says, I was brought up once upon a time on buy and hold. You know, you buy a stock, you hold it for 20 years. And what this ratio chart clearly says is, you know, switching your allocations between stock and bonds in the cycle makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
You know, it just makes a whole lot of sense. And you don't have to be a guru and pick the exact top and exact bottom. So sort of sensible switching makes a whole lot of sense. That's number one. But number two, the other thing it says to me is we've got a real conundrum. Because when the time should come when we think it's time to switch to bonds, you know, if you look at what we all did in 2008 and 2009, when we went to cash or we went to bonds, it was a lot easier because the quality questions were nowhere near as tricky as they are today. Because this time, you know, if you have another time when it comes to switch, there are real credit issues in the bond market that didn't exist then, or they certainly weren't as prevalent. So the question is, you know, to me, it's going to be the switch from equities to bonds is going to be a trickier one.
Oh, it absolutely is. And you bring up a really good point. And I don't know how we're going to be able to address that, because even the things that were considered safe at that point in time, I question whether or not we would still think they are.
Right. Right. And the last thing I wanted to bring up just what before we close is, you know, I have to go back to seasonal patterns because I love to look at seasonal patterns.
Yep.
The fourth quarter in the, you know, if you look at the, you know, what time of the year is generally good in the market, but in the second term of a presidential cycle, midterm election, the fourth quarter is normally a good quarter.
Absolutely.
Right. So seasonal patterns would not necessarily argue for a great third quarter, but they would argue for a reasonable fourth quarter.
Absolutely. And I, you know, even independent of whether it's a presidential, you know, which year in the presidential cycle we're in, or whether it's an interim year, election year or not, fourth quarter is always the best quarter of the year.
Right.
And so there are many years, I've gone back and studied this very extensively, there are many years in which the stock market is down from, you know, start of year to end of year, but the fourth quarter has a really good time to be invested, even though the rest of the year was terrible.
Right. Well, the reason I'm such a believer that we could get what's called a crash-up scenario is you have the bond market is huge compared to the stock market, and the question is if you have real quality issues in the bond market, where are you going to go? So
that's it. It's the second biggest market, so there's really not, you know, it's going to find a home for some of that money. There's no question.
Right. We can't all go to cash.
Right.
Okay. You ready to start part two?
Yeah, I just want to, before I close out, because, you know, I've gone back and I've listened to the things that I said on the prior Solari reports, and I could say that, in general, if I didn't know me, I would think I was bearish.
Uh-huh.
And because I tend to present, you know, the bearish side. And I just want everybody to realize that, you know, I'm not throwing in the towel on being cautious, because that will always be my nature. But I did want to try and take a more balanced approach. And that's why, you know, I wanted to present that final chart, just to show that this market could have more legs up and we shouldn't be trying to call and pick tops and or think that it couldn't go higher just because valuation's where they are.
Okay, so can I be the bear?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So we know, I've talked about it several times in the Solari report, we know that we saw survey reports that we are seeing more and more sort of government-controlled pension funds, sovereign wealth funds shifting into equities and what's called cross-border assets. So we've got a big presence of, you know, very large pots of what I would call centrally managed money. And so we have a financial system globally, which is one very centrally managed, number one, and number two, has extraordinary amounts of both debt and derivative leverage. And when you have something that's very centrally managed and has a lot of leverage in it, the swing of what could happen gets wider and wider. You know, it's like a pendulum that can swing much wider. A market tends to ground you back to ground, and so the pendulum can swing less. And so I think the unnerving thing, if you're looking at your investment options, is, you know, a pendulum that can swing between a PE of 6 and a PE of 162 can make you very, very, what was the bottom in 2008? Was it 8 or 10?
Yeah, well, I actually didn't even get into single digits, and that was one of the reasons why those that follow the market think that that wasn't the bottom.
Oh, okay.
That was one of the arguments. So it was, I think it was 11, or it was double digits, but it wasn't single, and that was
all I can tell you. Something that can swing from 11 to 162 makes me nervous.
Yeah, of course.
So I think that's why you tend to sound like a bear, because you know the variability which is possible.
I know, and you have to unfortunately listen to me every single day, and you understand me, but I just didn't want everybody to come on here and think that I was a bear, because I do think what you have to do is take what the market is giving you. At some point in time, the pendulum is going to swing the other way, and you
right.
need to get out of the way. And believe me, I'm not Pollyannish at all,
right.
but you have to take what the market's giving you, and don't call tops, and just be prepared to react when you need to. That's all.
Right, right. Okay, are you ready? I tried to come up with a title for this section, something other than Finding Bottoms, but I couldn't.
Well, when I read what you wrote, I thought this was going to be funny. I was going to say something, but I didn't want to be off color, so I'll just...
Okay.
Right. So, you know, each quarter when I know this is coming up, I try and look for either something that's educational or some form of a usable strategy to help investors create a winning edge. And that winning edge is really, you know, to try and, I don't say beat the system, but protect what they have and maximize gains.
Right. And one thing I should say is one of the reasons we think a lot about this right now is, you know, you have something that's strong and trending upwards that's very high.
Yes.
So it is perfectly natural to say, how can I switch from something that's high and get into the next, you know, the next thing to begin. And
yeah.
So it's a very logical thing, particularly because I'm always bugging you. Is it time yet for the emerging markets? Is it time yet?
Yes. Yes, that is true, listeners.
Yeah.
That is exactly what I get to hear. So just, you know, just an example, last quarter, you know, I presented that simple moving average crossover system, and that historically has done a fantastic job at outperforming the market. So, you know, in keeping with that same theme this quarter, you know, what I thought of is that when we talked about this, the original discussion was more about value investing. Because, you know, value investing, whether you want to call it bottoms or not, but value investing, there are stacks and stacks of investment research that show that value investing really has outperformed all other approaches for investing for those that have long-term investment horizons.
Right.
You know, if you're a day trader or somebody that's a momentum trader short-term, this discussion isn't going to be for you. But if you're a long-term, I want to buy this thing and kind of like you said, buy and hold, although that, you know, in my mind, that's never going to be and you're always going to have to manage it. If you want to buy it and hold it for a long period of time, then you want to, as you always try and point out, you know, we want to pick a point at which it's, you know, we think it's bottomed and the direction has changed and it really can't go much lower.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not sure everybody knows, but I consider myself a tightwad or, you know, and that's not very politically correct, but I'll consider myself a value investor. And, you know, I'm always in search of those elusive, unloved, beaten down investments that have good long-term prospects. I'm not talking about junk, but have fallen out of favor for one reason or another.
Right.
Because if you're patient, these investments will be the difference between average portfolio returns and outperformance, kind of like
right.
the model that I presented last quarter.
It's so what I told you. That's the quote I gave you from Buffett on Monday. Well, whether socks or stocks, I like quality merchandise when it's priced down.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So anyway, what I'm going to do tonight is just talk about or try and attempt to build a functional framework to identify maybe some rare nuggets that what to look for bottom for opportunities. Okay?
Okay.
So there, in my mind, you know, the problem with value is that there's real no definition of what that means. And for me, what I'm doing is just using my value, my definition for value. And so one of the things that I look for, there's three basic common characteristics. First off is that there's a sentiment extreme. Now, sentiment is really hard to measure, and there are a few companies that do track it, and you can find it for stock markets. You can find it for a few things like some commodities like gold and silver, but it's really hard to find it in general. But if you do find it and that is one key that you really want to have in your on your behalf. Because as I said before, if you're looking for a bottom, you want to make sure that as many of the people that had that investment have sold it, because it can't go any lower.
Right.
So that was item number one. Item number two is what I call it exhaustion selling. And what exhaustion selling is when you have a capitulatory, everybody just kind of throws in the towel. And you have this huge spike in volume. So on a stock, you're going to see a huge spike in volume above whatever is normally seen on a daily basis. Now, the huge spike does not correlate to the bottom. I just want to say that, and I'll show you that in some charts. What that does is that tells you that the majority of the herd has thrown in the towel. There's always going to be those late to the party or the non-believers that are going to come in after the fact. So what you tend to do is you see a spike, and then you see a decline in volume, dramatic decline in volume, but prices continue to fall. And it's when that dramatic decline in volume and prices have bottomed tells you that the exhaustion selling is over.
Okay.
Now, one thing I do want to point out is that it's really – you're going to find exhaustion selling more in stocks than you are in commodities. And the reason why is because, you know, for example, if you're growing corn, you're naturally going to go out and buy a hedge on corn. So you're going to have to hold on to that hedge regardless of whether the price is going up or going down.
Right.
And so you're not going to see the kind of selling that you would where you have everybody just throwing in the towel.
Right.
Okay, and the final common characteristic is that there's a bottoming pattern. And what I mean by that is let's take, you know, rather than describe it, let's take a look at some images that I put together. And the first one is chart 12. And what you see is normally this is a double bottom. So what you see is a fall in price, a slight rise back up, and then a fall back to about where the prior price was. Ideally, you'd like to see it a little bit higher, but it doesn't have to be. And that was the final end to the selling, and from there it moves on up. And the next example of a bottoming pattern is a triple bottom. Very, very similar to the double bottom, except the only difference is it comes back down and does it three times.
Right. So you bought, then you got faked out.
Yep. And then you go, I'm getting out, and then it goes down back down to the bottom again, and it takes off. So,
yeah.
You know, this is where, you know, you have to be patient, and you have to wait for some indication to tell you that the bottom is in, but we're going to get into that a little bit. Okay, the next one is just a variation on a triple bottom, and this is an inverse head and shoulders. And all this means is that you have, you know, it looks like an upside down, you know, a right shoulder, a left shoulder, and a head. And what you see is you see a drop in price and then a slight move up and then a further drop in price. And then ideally, this is a really, really good high probability bottoming pattern when you see that final shoulder, that right shoulder being formed,
mm-hmm.
and it's above the head.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then finally, there's the chart number 15, which is the elusive rounded bottom. If you're a Japanese candlestick lover, they're called fry pan bottoms.
Okay.
So what you're going to see is some variation of those four things, and they're really only one thing, but, you know, until you go through them, you can kind of see how they all kind of look together. Because if you looked at example of the rounded bottom, you could really see a head and shoulders there.
Right.
So
when you come out the other side, what you're really doing is you're waiting to see some indication by the change in prices that this bottom period is over.
Yep.
Yep.
Price is what tells you that the bottom is in.
Right.
But these indicators help you kind of gauge that we're getting close.
Right. Now, I would say this, it's a lot harder to be confident that the bottom is, you know, has happened than would indicate. And I would say the precious metals market has been real proof of that, because every other day you got all these gold bugs calling a bottom, and of course it doesn't happen. Anyway.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, well, we'll get into that at the end. So what I've done is put together some examples to try and just show everybody how it's worked out. So let's go to
oil.
My next chart, which is chart number 16, which is crude oil. Mm-hmm. So what I wanted to do was to mention before we get into the crude oil, I wanted to say that these patterns are fractal in nature. And what that means is that they are good across any time period that you're looking. So whether you're looking at an hourly chart, a minute chart, a daily chart, a weekly chart, you're always going to see consistent those kinds of things. They're going to be that same pattern is going to be available. So you don't have to limit your ability. So depending upon the kind of investor you are, you're going to see that thing. The other thing that's important to remember here is that commodities are going to be a little bit more difficult to manage, and so just keep that in mind. And it's much easier to see these bottoms after they happen rather than when you're in the middle of them.
Right.
And that was, I think, your point. So let's take a look at chart number 16, which is crude oil. So in 2008, it peaked at 148 or 146, and it fell down to the bottom, it looks like, in 2009, 2010. And what you see, or excuse me, 2008, 2009, what you see is, first off, it had a decline of 50% or more. So that was item number one. That was the first thing I look for. The second thing I look for is some sort of bottoming pattern, and it was a really nice double bottom there. Now, if you look at the volume, which is in the lower pane, you can see that volume really didn't indicate any spikes along the way. So that's another, you know, this is one where that volume isn't going to help you confirm that you got a bottom, because that's all oil is.
Right.
So let's take a look at the next chart, which is coffee, which is another commodity, but in fact, just because of how coffee is traded, this actually did correlate with volume did help correlate and confirm what we saw. So again, we saw a peak in 2011 at a little $3 per ton and a bushel, I'm sorry. And what we saw was a bottom in 2013 at below a dollar. And so that fell 65%, met that criteria.
Right.
We had a double bottom. Now, it was a little bit slanted, but that's perfectly fine. It's a variation of the double bottom. And we saw the capitulatory selling because, as I said, you're going to get a spike in volume, and you saw that around April of 2013. And then prices, along with volume, continued to drift down and down and down. Okay, and you got a bottom, and there was your signal. And look what happened afterwards.
Right.
It went from a dollar to over $2 in less than 3 or 4 months.
Right.
So that was a double in 3 months.
Right.
I remember following that thinking, you know, gosh, I wish I would have gotten into that because it was a real good buying opportunity, and Lord, I missed out on 100% gain in 3 months. So
it's much easier to find them in hindsight.
Yes, it is. Well, it's maybe not so much find them, but be convinced they're worth your investment. That's the next thing.
Right.
Okay, so now we'll switch to commodities and look at some individual stocks. You might have heard of this company called Apple.
Mm-hmm.
It had a peak in 2012. Now this is a risk. This is a share adjusted price because they've went 1-for-7 split. But they had a peak in 2012. It bottomed in 2013. And look what you got. You got somewhere between 40-50%, which is what I look for as a minimum. I got a double bottom signal, which is, you can see, they were almost exactly the same bottoms. But most importantly, you notice the volume spike that you got, a capitulatory volume spike, and then you got a volume decline, which led to, everybody finally throwing in a towel.
Right.
And then, lo and behold, once the bottom is in, what happened? It doubles in price.
See, now I find it much easier to try and assess a company than a commodity, because you can, if you're looking at a company's cash flows, you can estimate some kind of value, and you'll see situations where the price swings way under what I might estimate the price is, or way over. Whereas with a commodity, who knows? I mean, a commodity doesn't have a dividend flow. It doesn't have a cash flow. I think it's much harder to value than a company.
I couldn't agree more. You have some reference points that whether they're right or wrong, at least you have some reference points for valuing a stock or a company than you do a commodity.
Right.
And then the final chart I wanted to take a look at, which is the S&P. And I did this, I included this, the entire chart, because I did want to talk about something besides the bottom in this one. So again, I look for a minimum of 40% decline. And from top to bottom, it went 56%. And what we had was an inverse head and shoulders there. Now, it was a massive head there from the shoulders, but that was a very interesting and well signaled bottoming pattern there. I mean, those to me, when you find those are high probability investments.
Right. And it's much more meaningful because you're talking about a very broad basket as opposed to something like coffee or apple, where you're talking about either one commodity or one company.
Yep. And also, so just to show you how these things continue to work, if you move on over to the right of the slide, you'll see that it had another, you know, we had a decline back in 2010. And you can see that it created an inverse head and shoulders, and it took off from there.
Right.
And you can see it had another decline in 2011, and it created a double bottom, and it took off from there.
Right.
So these things happen all the time, but the difference between those last two bottoms was the fact that it hadn't fallen 56%. So when I'm looking at being the tightwad that I am, I want to get in when I think that, because I had no idea, I'd much rather buy it after a 56% sell-off than a 10 or 15% sell-off.
Right.
And so that's why I'm looking for that first criteria, which is the major sell-off. So the other thing I did want to point out, and I skipped over, was the fact that notice you had a capitulatory selling. The selling volume declined, and as that declined, that reached the bottom of price, and then then volume started to pick up as the price starts to increase.
Right.
The other point I wanted to make, and before we move on to what this whole topic is about, is that the inverse works too. So these bottoming patterns, if you flip the chart upside down, you have the same exact bottoming patterns that will, when turned upside down, become topping patterns. So for those that want to look for tops because they want to get out, there's nothing different, you know, the volumes may or may not be, but the patterns will be the same.
Right.
You'll get a double bot, you'll get a double top, you'll get a head and shoulders top, you'll get a triple top, or you'll get a rounded top. All of the things look exactly the same. So whether you're talking about tops or bottoms, and this was just a discussion on bottoms, the patterns are the same.
Right. Right.
All right. Now, what I wanted to do was, after we've had that under our belt, I just want to state before we move on that just because those three criteria are present doesn't guarantee it's a bottom. All it does is increase the odds that a bottom is in. And what I did was chart number 20, I wanted to show you an example of one that didn't work out, well, at least so far.
Right.
Okay. So here's a look at corn. It's a commodity. It lost 42% from its peak to its bottom, or what could have been a bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And what you see is that very much looks like a rounded bottom.
Mm-hmm.
It started to take off, and it had a nice little rise. And look at what it's done since then as you look to the far right-hand side of the chart.
Boom.
Clearly, that wasn't the bottom. And one of the clues, though.
You have to understand I'm in Hickory Valley, Tennessee, and everybody's crying about this.
Well, one of the things that was, remember I said I'd like to see confirmation from all three of those criteria. One of the things that didn't happen was the capitulatory selling.
Right.
That should have been a warning flag. But again, with commodities, not only they're hard to value, they're hard to know because you don't have that extra confirmation in volume necessarily.
Right.
Okay. So now that we've kind of thrown some cold water on the on this exciting possible opportunity, what I really wanted to do was say, okay, with that under our belt, let's take a look at something that might be an opportunity that has met all three criteria.
Right. And after it's over, I'm going to throw some more cold water on it.
Okay. Well, that's fine. So that is the Gold Bugs, the Miners Index.
Uh-huh.
So let's take a look at chart number 21. And this is a long-term look at the Huey. I'm not sure if everybody knows what the Huey is, but it is the Gold Bug Index. That's what it's called. And it's a good representation of all the mining stocks. The problem with it is that it doesn't have a volume because it's not a traded instrument. So while I'm showing you this chart, I'm going to move to another chart to confirm that we have a volume spike. So let's take a look at this. What you got was a massive 70% decline. So that met criteria number one. And what you also have is an inverse head and shoulders bottom, right, at the bottom where it's currently sitting at.
Are we looking at the Huey or GDX?
We're looking at the Huey right now.
Okay.
Because we're going to switch to the GDX. I'm just using the Huey because I prefer that index, except we can't get confirmation with volume.
Right.
And we'll move to the GDX next. So the one thing I do want to point out is that, you know, one thing you always have to be careful of is that head fake. And if you look, I identified between the peak and where we're at now, there was a double bottom that came in. And it had a really nice rise. It rose up, I don't know, 70%, 60%, and then watch out below. And the interesting thing was is that that didn't meet my criteria because it wasn't a minimum of 40% drop. So I ignored that one as a long-term the bottom is in signal. So this one currently does. So let's switch to the Huey, which is chart number 20. To the GDX away from the Huey.
Okay.
It looks very similar. Again, it's just a different makeup of stocks, but they hold almost the same, but not exactly. So this one fell 69% from its peak to its trough. It currently has an inverse head and shoulders bottom. And if you notice, it also confirmed the capitulatory selling that we wanted. So we saw a bottom, a final exhaustion selling, and since then we've seen a decline in volume and price continued to go further down. So it meets all the criteria. And I like to bring opportunities to people's, to the table to let them make the decision, because I'm not saying that people should go out and buy this, but I am bringing this up. Because the one, and let's switch to the final chart, and I kind of just want to say why it matters.
Okay.
This is my why it matters chart. So what this is a ratio of the Huey versus the S&P 500. So we went through this bottom one other time back in the year 2000. And if you were able to identify a bottom and if you were able to stick with the Huey, now, of course, picking the absolute bottom and the absolute top are impossible, but I just want to show you the magnitude of the difference of what we're talking about.
Right.
During that period of time, the S&P lost 14%, and the Huey was up almost 1,200%.
Right.
You don't have to pick the top or the bottom.
So, I know it's a good switch.
And the one thing I do want to caution people is that while I said it is a potential opportunity, there's a warning flag right here.
Right.
Still. And that warning flag is that it hasn't reached down to the bottom that we saw in 2000. And normally when you go up, you go back down and test those levels.
Right.
So I did want to also close in that if you were able to pick the exact top in the Huey, you can see what has happened since then. The S&P is up 63% while the Huey is down 62%. So making sure that following these ratio charts are really good to help, you know, position yourself for outperformance.
Right. And the reason I'm very sort of, I feel like I'm from Kansas. Show me.
Mm-hmm.
Is if you look at the politics right now on the miners, it's very tricky and it's very murky. And I don't see it clearly, and it always makes me nervous when there's serious politics going on that I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got me sort of gun shy on the miners. So whereas in many markets, it's much easier to read what the fundamentals are, what the politics are. This one's pretty tricky. You know, we're in the middle of what's been a political battle zone for a couple of years now, so it's one where I just feel very cautious, and that's why I'm always so interested in looking at what the charts say.
Can I throw cold water in your cold water?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, my contrary to that is, again, people don't know us, and this is our day-to-day routine, because this is how you vet and make sure that you make good investment decisions. But the one thing I will say against that is that how an investor would help to mitigate that, because I don't disagree with you at all. But how you mitigate that is not through avoiding. It's not avoidance.
Oh, it's not avoidance. It's how much you put in.
Exactly.
Right.
It's about how much you put on it. So,
right.
You know, you might stick your toe in the water and put a small smattering in, and as you get further confirmation that a lot of those clouds are clearing up, then you can start adding more. But don't take it that you should avoid it. It's just you should
right.
be cautious.
So the question is, do we turtle or do we cannonball? So this, to me, is a turtle.
Okay, that works for me. So, again, I want to close with, you know, this is a potential opportunity, and this is, I just want to make sure it's really clear, this is not a recommendation, because buying decisions are based on an individual's risk tolerance, their investment time frames, and most importantly, how they're going to be managing the position. And that has to be individual and separate for each and every person. So I'm just bringing ideas to the table, and a real good example is if you look at my blog posts, all I do is bring ideas to the table and let the investor decide whether it meets their criteria. So
I'm
an idea person.
I think what, you know, what we've tried to say with this, and that's why I come back to statistics matter, is that over time you see, you know, cycles between things.
Yeah.
You know, bonds to stocks or precious metals to equities.
Yep.
And you see enormous swings.
Yes.
And yet things return to the mean.
Yeah.
And so if you pay attention to those swings and you try and, you know, you try and pay attention to how you're allocated, it can make an enormous difference. So
absolutely. And that summarizes exactly what I was trying to do with all this, and just let people know that, you know, here's a methodology, and keep in mind that maybe the pendulum hasn't finished swinging, but when it does, it's worth your consideration.
Right. Nothing lasts forever. Yep. Okay. Well, Chuck, thank you so much.
It was
we very much appreciate it, and we look forward to the third quarter.
Okay.
A seasonal pattern said should be dreadful, but your chart says it might not be.
Let's see what happens.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.